Excuse me, Sonny. Do you happen to know what the defense budget was for 1982?
$700 million a day. Excuse me, but I got to go.
I'd like to call my daughter Doris along. Yeah. You happen to know what time it is in Tanzania?
12 hours later than it is here. That woman is crazy. I'll see you later, man.
Hello, hello. This is Paul Kangas. This is radio station KPOO, and this is Reality Sandwich, and an evaluation of the assassination of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Robert Kennedy, and occasionally Malcolm X. If you've been following this program, we've kept you abreast of the major events that are happening in the country regarding the assassination of John Kennedy. And our theme music has been provided to us by the live San Francisco Mime Troupe. Thank you, Mime Troupe. All right, let's get right into it. I was called a couple months ago in October by a newspaper out of Austin, Texas, after they read my article in the Realist magazine about the role of George Bush and Richard Nixon in the assassination of John Kennedy. The Austin Chronicle called me up and said, "Give us your sources, please. That was an amazing article. We would like to do some more research." So I gave them my sources and thought, well, you never can tell what the straight media is going to do. They came up with some incredible information, which I will now go into. If, for those of you who have seen the movie JFK, this information will supplement what you saw in the movie. For those of you who have read the book On the Trail of the Assassins and who have not seen the movie yet, you will find this fits right in, dovetails right in with what Garrison was talking about. For those of you who would like to read the book, it's available at Marcus Books at Fillmore near Geary, Fillmore and two blocks north of Geary, and also at a bookstore in the Mission called Forrester Books, 16th and Mission. All right, here's what we have discovered on George Bush's role in the assassination of John Kennedy. There was a man named George de Morenschild, a wealthy oil millionaire from Texas, who was one of these people wandering around the country, wandering around the world, wealthy people doing business wherever they felt like it. And he had been involved with the OSS during the Second World War as part of the French underground here in the United States, whatever that means, how you can be part of the French underground in the United States. But that's what the history books show. Well, one day, de Morenschild's at a cocktail party in Houston, and he happens to comment to a Wall Street Journal reporter, Wall Street Journal reporter, in March of 1977, that he was in charge of Lee Harvey Oswald. And the reporter said, "Oh, really? How interesting. Amazing. Please tell me more." So de Morenschild just mentions that he was the person that was in touch with Lee Harvey Oswald just before the assassination, and that he was a CIA control agent in charge of training Lee Harvey Oswald. So the Wall Street Journal reported that story. The next day, an investigator from the House Select Committee investigating the JFK assassination called up de Morenschild and asked if he could interview de Morenschild the next day at his home in Houston. And de Morenschild said, "Yes, I believe so." And so the investigator immediately flew down to Houston to interview de Morenschild. 2 hours later, George de Morenschild was found shot to death in his home in Houston. So one more witness meets an interesting death. In fact, if you remember reading the book On the Trail of the Assassins by Garrison, in it they talk about how this one witness named Ferry was approached by the House, the Warren Commission, to investigate the assassination of John Kennedy. And 2 hours, and then he was interviewed by a reporter from the Washington Post named Lardner. And 2 hours after the Washington Post reporter interviewed Ferry, Ferry was found dead in his home, the same way George DeMornchal was found dead in his home. Well, they started looking into the background of George DeMornchal, and what they found is that in April of 1963, DeMornchal sent Oswald to go and live in New Orleans, the town Oswald had grown up in. And DeMornchal then took a trip to Washington, D.C., and spent a couple of days in the office of the Central Intelligence Agency. Following that, DeMornchal went back to supervising Oswald. Then, the week before the assassination of John Kennedy, DeMornchal takes a trip to Haiti, allegedly on oil business. And he's in Haiti at a Port-au-Prince bar when news comes over that John Kennedy's been assassinated. DeMornchal, thinking he's safe in a bar in Haiti, starts chatting. And he asks the bartender and several people who had been watching the news when he walked in, oh, by the way, when the news came over, did they mention if the suspect in the assassination of John Kennedy was a man named Lee Harvey Oswald? And people in the bar said, no, they haven't named the suspect yet. But some of the people in the bar remembered DeMornchal making that comment to them. There were four or five witnesses in the bar, Americans, who DeMornchal was speaking to when he said that. One of them happened to have a friend in the Dallas newspapers and called up the Dallas Herald and mentioned to the reporter that this guy, George DeMornchal, had asked immediately after the assassination of John Kennedy if the assassin was named Lee Harvey Oswald. So a Dallas Herald reporter called up DeMornchal and asked him, did you really say that? Immediately after the assassination of John Kennedy, did you ask several people in the bar if Oswald had been named as the assassin yet? And he said, yes. And the reporter said, why did you think of the name Oswald? And DeMornchal said, well, I knew Oswald when I lived in Texas, and he had a gun, and I just thought, you know, he might be involved in the assassination of John Kennedy. And that was as far as that story developed. Well, when DeMornchal was found shot to death in his home, in his pocket was found a little black phone book. In the little black phone book were several interesting names. One of the names was George Herbert Walker Bush, alias Poppy. It listed his unlisted home phone number of George Bush, his home address, and also the address and phone number for his oil company, Zapata Offshore Oil Midland, which was a CIA front group George Bush was using to smuggle drugs into the United States. That was one of the names found in George DeMornchal's pocket after he was shot. Another name found was Lee Harvey Oswald. And another name was a man named Clint Murchison. That name will be very significant the day before the assassination of John Kennedy. So if you're taking notes, write down the name Clint Murchison and watch what happens with the name of Murchison, Bush, and DeMornchal as the facts develop in this case. What you're listening to is an ongoing investigation into who killed John Kennedy. It's an investigation that is exploding in America right now, 1992. Everywhere you turn, people are digging up new facts on the assassination of Kennedy. Old witnesses who were afraid to talk in the past are now stepping forward and speaking out, naming names, dates, places. For the first time in America in 28 years, a true investigation is happening as to who killed John Kennedy. It's become a mass movement. It's going on in every town, every radio station, every newspaper, every television station in America and the world, thanks to the work of Oliver Stone and Jim Garrison and all the other investigators who've kept track of this case over the years. Now, also concerning De Morenschul, let's jump now to the day before the assassination of John Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. There's a party going on at the mansion of Clint Murchison. Oh, by the way, if you're listening to this program and taping it, good. We want you to tape it and pass the tapes on to your friends. There's a party going on the day before the assassination in Dallas, Texas. And at the party is Richard Nixon, a friend of Clint Murchison, Joan Crawford, the wife of the president of Pepsi-Cola. They're at the Clint Murchison mansion. George Bush is at the mansion. George De Morenschul is at the mansion. This is a party, a big social event in Dallas. This, by the way, was reported in the Dallas newspapers and by a reporter named William Penn Smith. So, at the party, it's basically an assembling of the generals, like the invasion of Normandy, where all the generals are getting together at the final moments before the invasion to give the final go-ahead. But in this case, the final go-ahead is for the murder of John Kennedy. Let me point out three major reasons why they had to kill Kennedy. One, Kennedy had cut off the air cover for the invasion of Cuba. Then he signed a peace pact with the Russians, an informal peace pact between Khrushchev and Kennedy to not allow any invasions of Cuba while John Kennedy is president. And since Kennedy is about to be reelected in 1964, he will hold the office for 8 years. Then after John Kennedy is elected, his brother, Robert Kennedy, will be elected and reelected for 8 years. Then his brother Ted will be elected and reelected for 8 years, meaning the Kennedy family will hold the White House from 1960 to 1984, a dynasty. So they cut off the air cover, and then Kennedy issues an order withdrawing all U.S. CIA and military personnel from Vietnam. Then he signs an Oil Depletion Act, which cuts the oil millionaires off from their tax savings and allows the government to tax the oil millionaires at a fair rate. The oil millionaires, the cowboys of Texas, don't like this. The Texans like Jim Baker, George Bush, Robert Mosbacher. Mosbacher today is our Secretary of State. Jim Baker, correction, is the Secretary of State. Robert Mosbacher, close personal friend of George Bush, is now our Secretary of Commerce. And George Bush, of course, is our president. That was the day before. Now we'll take a musical break, and right after that, we'll get into the day of the assassination and some amazing FBI documents that have been discovered directly linking George Bush to the assassination of John Kennedy. Here we go.
Excuse me, Sonny. Do you happen to know what the defense budget was for 1982?
$700 million a day. Excuse me, but I got to go.
I'd like to call my daughter in Dar es Salaam.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know what time it is in Tanzania?
12 hours later than it is here. That woman is crazy. I'll see you later, ma'am.
It seems like you already know where we're at.
All right. Thank you, San Francisco Mime Troupe. Now, as I promised, some amazing new FBI documents have been found. It seems that on the day of the assassination of John Kennedy, a man named George Bush called the FBI to report that a political opponent of his, a political opponent in the Harris County Republican Party, a person that was even more right-wing than George Bush, according to Bush, had been talking about killing President Kennedy. The FBI clerk at the office took the notes and asked this George Bush what his home address was. He gave it. And then the FBI clerk filed a memo. The memo was found in 1988 by a reporter for the San Francisco Examiner. So they began an investigation of this memo. And they called up George Bush and asked George Bush, why did you call the FBI November 22nd, 1963 and report that a political opponent of yours was talking about killing President Kennedy? And George Bush said, I didn't do it. I don't remember making that call. George Bush totally denied that he had called the FBI and reported . Well, the examiner, the San Francisco Examiner, then called up this guy who Bush had attempted to frame to set up as a patsy, a guy named James Parrott in Texas, and asked Parrott, what do you know about George Bush reporting you to the FBI for the assassination of John Kennedy? And Parrott said, oh, yeah, Bush did that. He tried to set me up. He tried to make me patsy, just like the CIA made Oswald a patsy. They tried to frame me for the assassination of John Kennedy, just because I was a political opponent of George Bush's, and I was running for office against Bush for the Central Committee of the Republican Party in Harris County. So George Bush now denies this. Why would he deny it? Maybe because Bush doesn't want to be caught in the tangled web of lies he's been weaving around the assassination of John Kennedy. By the way, James Parrott said that he was at the Republican Party headquarters when John Kennedy was assassinated, and he does not remember seeing George Bush in Houston that day, or at the Republican headquarters, or seeing him anywhere that day. Yet George Bush claims he was there, and yet nobody saw him there. George Bush, where were you the day John Kennedy was killed? You claim to be in one place, yet nobody who was there remembers seeing you there. Now, the following day, November 23rd, 1963, the day after the assassination of John Kennedy, J. Edgar Hoover calls up George Bush in Miami and reports to him that the Cubans in Miami are celebrating the assassination of John Kennedy, and that since George Herbert Walker Bush is the CIA agent in charge of the Cubans in Miami, would you please ask the Cubans to cut it out, quiet it down, stop celebrating. If you keep celebrating the assassination of President Kennedy, somebody in the media might notice that you're celebrating and might think twice as to why you're celebrating. So Bush goes outside and tells his troops to quiet it down. So what if you had a successful coup d'etat? You can't openly celebrate it. You have to do it quietly. So come on inside and we'll do it quietly. Hoover then follows up his telephone calls to Bush with an FBI memo to the Department of State stating that, hey, we have a problem with these Cubans down here in Miami. and that we've informed Bush that he's got to keep him quiet. But I wonder if you could follow up on that and make sure they actually do. We've got to suppress any evidence that shows a connection between the Cubans and the assassination of John Kennedy. Now, a little investigation has been done into the role of George Bush in the CIA. By the way, George Bush denies being in the CIA from 1960 to 1974 when he was appointed director of the CIA. He denies being a member of the CIA. But investigators have located some interesting documents. It seems that George Bush's main role in the Central Intelligence Agency since 1963 has been collecting and suppressing evidence regarding the assassination of John Kennedy. Investigators have found memos, articles, and stories about the role of the Miami Cubans in the assassination of John Kennedy. And with George Bush's handwriting on these memos, it seems that George Bush's main file collection has been stories about the Kennedy assassination. Yet Bush denies this. For instance, here's another denial that Bush does. You remember the Iran-Contra scandal when North was prosecuted for his role in supplying guns and arms and trading them to the Contras for drugs? Well, George Bush denied that he was involved in any of that drug for guns trading. Yet, Oliver North's diaries show that George Bush was at the very first planning meeting in 1985. And yet Bush lied to Congress in 1988, denied having any role in the Contra supply network. But North's diary impeached Bush and showed that Bush was lying. Where was George Bush the day John Kennedy was killed? If you've been listening to this program for the last several months, you heard about the evidence that we obtained from a former CIA agent who delivered ships to the CIA for the invasion of Cuba, in which the CIA agent in charge, who was named George Bush, named the ships after his wife, Barbara, his hometown, Houston, and his oil company, Zapata. Yet George Bush denies being involved in that. What's going on, finally, in this country, is that a real investigation is happening that is uncovering the assassination. So what's the media going to do about it? The media has decided they're going to blame the mafia for the assassination of John Kennedy. There's an old mafia guy down in New Orleans named Marcello, Carlos Marcello, who's dying of cancer. He's old, old mafia hitman. And he has agreed with the CIA to take the rap for killing John Kennedy. So, right now the Dallas police are busy manufacturing false files to release next week to the American public. Washington, D.C. CIA is busy manufacturing false files. But we won't accept the false files. We already know what's in there. We know there are 7 key photos showing E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis arrested in Dallas, Texas for the assassination of John Kennedy. We know there is a file the FBI stole from Ricky White in Dallas, Texas a couple years ago. A file, a diary his father made detailing the CIA's assassination of John Kennedy the day it was happening. Contemporaneous files. So, these are the things we want to watch for. So we've developed a petition to try and petition Congress to release the true files, not only the photos from Dallas and the FBI files from New Orleans and the FBI files from Miami, but also the Watergate tapes, because on the Watergate tapes, Richard Nixon, the Honorable Richard Nixon, confessed openly to paying E. Howard Hunt $1 million to keep quiet about the role of Hunt and Bush in the assassination of John Kennedy. It's on the transcripts of the tape. If you would like copies of this transcript, write to us and we'll get it to you. But if you'd like a copy of the petition to release the White House tapes and the JFK files, write to us at P.O. Box 422-6444, San Francisco 94142, and we'll send you a petition. Send us a self-addressed stamped envelope and send us a donation. The more donation you send us, the more material we'll send you. The petition's free, but we'll send you other material that shows the role of Bush and Nixon in the Kennedy assassination. And we'll send you some of the files that are in the National Archives that are supposed to be secret, that they're trying to cover up still. So our address again is P.O. Box 422-6444, San Francisco 94142. And write to us and ask for the petition. By the way, the people out at San Quentin that have written to me, thank you for your letters, and you'll be getting your materials. If there's other people in prisons around the country, around that can hear us, and you want copies of the petition to circulate, you have a right in prison, by the way, to circulate a petition and to redress grievances while you're in prison, including petitioning Congress to release the JFK files and photos and the Watergate tapes. Let's call them from now on the JFK photos and the Watergate tapes. Anytime somebody tells you, oh, well, we got all this stuff, shows the mafia did it, you can just tell them we know better, that we know the CIA killed John Kennedy and we want the real files. Okay, thank you for listening. This has been Reality Sandwich. Your host is Paul Kangas. By the way, I'm a former guard for President Kennedy, and I presently work as an investigator. One of the investigations I'm doing is the assassination of John Kennedy. And here's some music